If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with two for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
If you're serious about getting better at mixing and producing, this is for you. Our Patreon gives you access to weekly ad-free technical episodes, plus a library of over 250 past episodes packed with mixing, mastering, and production knowledge you won't find anywhere else. Don't miss out. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start learning today. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, The Solution.
Oh yeah!
All right, Lou is indeed The Solution, today we're talking about something pretty interesting: is systems that prevent more back and forth and more revisions with clients. It's not necessarily about preventing revisions, because I mean, if you just mix good the first time. You know,
which is ultimately relative at the same time.
Yeah, I'm teasing, but I mean, like, there's like systems and stuff that you can use to
get good.
Kind of prevent back and forth. So, like, for example, like on my website, you have an intake. I have an intake form. Like, when people submit a request, I have like a way of like, okay, what are some, describe your song. What's your budget? Like, what is the some reference track, please include the rough. Like, what are some things that you like? What are some things you don't? So one of the things that I like to ask producers and artists is, like with the rough mix, relative to the rough mix, I ask, what's like, you know, for you, like your favorite parts? Like, what was the strike of genius there, moments of genius in this mix? And then what were some things that you're more flexible about, you know?
Yeah.
And just kind of get to know like what they're really thinking about. And what they didn't like. Like today I asked that to somebody and the client, the producer said, I made it feel, so the things that I liked is I like the dynamics and the natural arc, how it gets heavier at the end. I don't like reverbs, or I'm like, I may need some help in reverbs and just general use of space, right? Mm-hmm. That narrows it down a lot for me. And so I know what I can change and what I, you know, should try to at least like kind of anchor in.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of other things too, Lou. I talked about intake form, right? So there's less back and forth with like, we need to, that's different from what I'm thinking of. Sorry. Let me think straight.
Sure.
There's the back and forth friction between the client and the engineer from like first steps, like the back and forth. If you want to hit me up and hire me, you have to email me and it's going to take a few steps. And there's some friction there, right? A completely frictionless option of that, which can help, is you can buy and pay money on the website directly. So there is no need to email, you know, remove friction that way. Just immediately go into it. And that is something that's really, really important. But that's not what we're going to talk about. What we're talking about right now is
client proof,
removing friction from the back and forth with the client, you know, like kind of setting up for communication to get less revisions, to feel like you're more on the same page.
And to be honest, like this is an uncommunicated truth. And I know we don't want to paint it this way, but it's also weeding out some issues. Like, let's just be honest. If they're not willing to fill out the form or answer some of these questions, a lot of times they're just looking for a quick fix. And that usually doesn't result in, you know, a happy clientele base. You know what I mean? Like, if if you can't communicate with them and get some information out of them first so you know in which direction to take things, chances are you're probably not going to knock it out of the park in the first try because you have no information to go off of. So yeah, though it may seem like friction, it's friction that's actually good for both you and your client. It's a mutually beneficial friction.
Yeah. So yeah, we're not talking about friction and stuff. We're not talking about systems for like intaking new clients. We're talking about, you know, the problem is like endless notes, moving goalposts, vague feedback, you know.
What's the sustainability of the system you've put in place to be more efficient? You know?
Yeah, so let me tell you about my system, kind of the first steps in general, sure. Is that as much as I can, before I even open up the session, and at the very latest, before I submit V1, is I need to get on the phone with the client or the producer, whoever's part of the note-taking process, and I just need to listen to them. Honestly, it's not even about me listening to them or understanding them. It's them feeling like they actually said what they'd wanted to say and them feeling understood.
Yeah.
I know that sounds really weird. Of course, I'm going to listen to their thoughts and their feedback and stuff, but you'd be surprised how much just like helping them feel understood and feel like reminding them like kind of emotionally, hey, we're on the same team. Like, I'm going to do my best. Yeah, that's really great. That's awesome. You're awesome. And then kind of make sure that you're kind of aligned on vision and goals. You know, and if we can't get on a phone call, which is the most ideal, it's like 2 to 5 minutes. I don't think the first phone call's ever even gone 10 minutes. If I can't do that, then at minimum, just like a text back and forth the client. And it does get a little bit weird, like the bigger the client is, I still don't care. Like as much as you can, you push for. And from what I understand, talking to engineers that work with much bigger artists than me, they do the same thing. Like this is a big, important part of the process for like onboarding and like especially new clients. And then, you know, just getting, I don't typically call them every single time with, for example, someone that I've been working with for years, right? But especially like the first few mixes with someone, like just make sure, if not the first three, like at least the first one, like really get on the ball to show them that you're like a decent person. And that you're on top of everything and that you're really trying to help them, not trying to take over, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. Honestly, for me, there is a form where it just says request a quote and it just has a few questions as far as what needs to happen. But I don't put too much on the form personally just because we're bound to have the conversation. Like, I'm not accepting money from people I've never spoken to. That's just kind of a personal policy. It's kept me away from having any kind of headache clients, and not to say that, like, if you don't talk to somebody, there's no way of making something positive happen, but rather, I like having a relationship with the people that I work with. And if you're going to give me money, I would rather just have a conversation with you real quick and just make sure that, hey, listen, this is how I like to do things. This is my typical timelines, this and that. I just want to recommunicate this. I know it's on my form and stuff. I know I asked you about your deadlines. Typically, I use file pass and things of that nature where you can actually leave timestamp notes and everything. I can put revisions in that same link so you can always go back and we can always do things however. But you know, let me know about you. I would kind of just want to hear, how did you find out about me? And that way I can actually understand where they're coming from. And this has actually helped me weed out situations, or not situations, but rather project types that I want to avoid as well. Because sometimes there's people who have a passion project, and that's totally okay. But sometimes you can see the writing on the walls through these phone calls, more so than you can see in an intake form, because everybody's passionate, everybody's creative in our industry. It's a creative-based industry. But you kind of want to know what you're walking in on, because if you take a phone call with a conversation just saying like, hey, I'm really excited to do this. Is this how much I charge? Is that okay with you? And that's the end of your conversation. You didn't really get any information that actually benefits your client or yourself. And you're going to run into some red flags, whether that be you're kind of mixing in the wrong direction, meaning that you might have to start from scratch, or you just really didn't understand the vision, which is going to kind of like deteriorate the trust with your client more than anything. You're going to get revision requests either way sometimes, even if you hit it out of the park. There's going to be V1s that do amazing and people love them, but that's not always the case. And to say, you know, once again, quoting Manny Marroquin in the past and doing it again, most times the mix doesn't go the way you want it. It's whatever the client wants, you know?
Yeah.
So, there's, you know, having these conversations help.
Again, like the reason why, and again, I should have prefaced this, I would dare say there's very few things that I lean so strongly in one direction on. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those things. Listen, you could be the best mixer in the world. If the client doesn't trust you, they're going to ask for notes and revisions, and they're never going to be able to pick one.
Yeah.
This is a story when my first time going to mix with the Masters in like 2019 with Leslie, there was one of the best mixes that we heard as a group. He's like, I'm on like revision 12. And he's like, why? He's like, this is an incredible mix. And Leslie Brathwaite. So the guy that was mixing, he's like, there's this guy, this rapper, or I think like reggae artist possibly. And I think that's what it was. I think it was a reggae track. And it was this reggae artist, and he knew that the mixer was like a live sound engineer. And he's like, I don't know if he's like good at mixing and whatnot. And there's just like very little trust for whatever reason. And he probably knew, like, he's cheaping out on him because he's doing it for so cheap or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever the reason is, he feels like he wasn't getting a good deal. There was no trust. And that's one of the good reasons of charging more is like there's this baseline sensation of trust. Like, I expect you to give me something better.
Yeah.
I will say that in that situation, Leslie Brathwaite called the client and said, yo, quit being stupid. This is the best mix in the world. I have like a couple dozen Grammys. Trust me, this is a great mix. And then the guy finally took the mix. So it wasn't even about the mix being good or bad. That's the point of the story. The long-winded story, but the point of the story is, like, it doesn't matter how good your mix is. If there's no foundational trust, there's a high likelihood that you're going to keep getting feedback and revisions, and it's going to be like very cyclical. There's going to be like, and that's also inexperience too. Like, if that artist, that reggae artist, had a lot more experience and has worked with mixers in the past, he'd probably figure out how to be decisive. Right, be like, all right, that's good. This is not good. We need to work on this. We need to work on this. Like, or it is good now, right? Has the confidence to be like, it's done. But if there's no trust, especially with someone with less experience, you're not going to get to an end goal like sometimes. So just be aware. The phone call and everything that we do from communication, constant communication, is for trust. We even had someone on the Discord, maybe someone DM'd me directly, gave me a screenshot of their communications with the client. I forgot who it was. I apologize.
Oh,
shout
you're talking
out to
about
you.
The communication one.
Yeah, there's a guy that showed me screenshots with the client, and the client's like, wow, I've never worked with an engineer that's like on the ball with communicating.
Yeah.
And the guy wasn't even doing it fast. Like, in the text message, I said, I'll get it to you like in a couple days. Like, so he wasn't even like doing super fast. He was just on top of communicating what process he was in and how far along he's at and what to expect. Yeah. And the client was like, holy crap, I've never worked with an engineer this good before. It was just like, it was just funny. So another thing that I require with my systems is that I require a rough mix. I do not, I like almost will refuse to mix without a rough mix. I don't care
how
bad it is.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I've accepted a mix without a rough in a while. That's, it almost feels dirty to accept a mix without one. Like, it's that, ooh.
Yeah. So like, I like to do accept it. I don't accept any mix without it as much as I can, unless there's a few exceptions. But that's for me. That's not for the client. That's for me. So, and ideally, even if the mix is really bad, I'm trying not to get that far off. Like, if I am, like, if in the original rough mix, the guitars are louder than the drums, maybe I turn down the guitars a little bit, but those guitars better still be loud in my mix, you know? There's something that made them say, okay, this is good enough now, and passing it on to the next side. Like, even if they're horrible at mixing, there's something about it that gave them enough confidence to then pass it off, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just something to do. Another system that I have is with you too. We use FilePass. Now there's one downside to FilePass, but in FilePass is a consolidated place to leave notes, timestamped notes. You know, a client can listen on FilePass, mixingmusicpodcast.com/FilePass. And it's basically just a cloud. You could do this with Dropbox too, but it's just a cloud storage. It's just cloud storage. You upload the final delivery and then they can comment in timestamp locations, different notes. And consolidating everyone notes, especially if it's like a band where there's like, or like an artist with managers and multiple producers, if there's like number of people giving notes, consolidating all notes into one thing is great. You don't want some notes coming in through emails and another person sending you texts and then another through WhatsApp, another on Facebook. That's horrible. Just like do your best when delivering the files. Be like, any notes are, please input them on the website. Now, the one thing that FilePass doesn't do that I think other cloud servers might do. Let me know if you work with, if you use a service that does this. It's only, it's specific to audio, but if there's a way that you can upload the rough and the mix, and if there's a way for them to be able to, in one click, switch between the rough and the mix. If you do it through engineers, like if you upload it through engineers, you can do that. And there's, I think there's one that does that out there where you can have multiple versions. So with a single click, you can switch between the versions.
I think a friend of ours, Shaq, was showing me one that he uses that does that.
There you go.
I forget what it is. But I thought you were going to say a different feature. And this is not becoming like a things we wish FilePass did. But I thought you were going to say real-time updates because I have to put in my emails saying like, hey, let me know if you've left any notes, this and that. It usually gives me end of week updates and recaps.
Oh, mine does immediate updates. They send me emails immediately.
They send you an email every time a note's been put on?
They send me an email every single time someone puts the first note on a new project.
First note, but not follow-ups.
So that's like a non-essential for me because I get the notes and then I upload a new version.
And then they put
notes on the new version, then I get another email.
Yeah. I've had
it's also for FilePass specifically, I think they send you another email if they put on notes the next day. And then at the end of every single day, there's a summary of all of the notes that have been
sent. Yeah, the summary I get for sure. Yeah.
You don't get, I don't get
individuals get for each. Yeah.
I get individual and summaries too.
Yeah.
You should be doing that. You should check in your options.
I should check that. Yeah. I tried looking into that before, but maybe that's a newer edition or something. I'm not sure. Yeah. But,
well, that's got to be an option on your end because I've never not had that.
Yeah. But yeah, outside of that, honestly, something you kind of want to actually ask. I guess you could say when intaking client, you let me know, DK, but I've weeded people out based on expectations. I kind of have an expectation question if something feels like it's way out of the realm of what they're asking for. So a good example of this would be like, hey, you know, it's very poorly recorded drums, this and that. They're willing to pay your rate, this and that. But at the references that they're giving, I'm like, hey, is this basically what you want the drums to sound like? They're like, yeah, it's like, I'm sorry, but if you're trying to keep the drums natural, they're not going to sound like that with the recordings you provided. It's either trigger them or you're going to have to re-record drums. At what point are you sending clients back? Because at a certain point, I've found myself declining projects just due to like the, I guess you could say the overall concept of shit in, shit out. Like I can't really polish a bad recording into sounding like, you know, Cardi B or Beyonce or Lizzo or anything like that. You kind of have to have at least have some baseline of a standard quality. Even an SM7B in an untreated room can do wonders. But at a certain point, there's kind of a threshold where you have to kind of cut it off.
Yeah, okay, so I'm going to have to counterbalance this. Because on one end, you should definitely protect your brand with your life. Right.
Yeah.
And if something is like, if you are being totally real and you're like, there's no way that I can make you happy because I don't think I can do it. I'm not excited about it and I'm not going to do a good job or whether it's because I can't do a good job because my skills are limited at this time. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, that's one idea. The other side of the spectrum is that's your fucking job, you know, to make something shit sound good. And it's not for me to determine whether or not this, it's like, it's going to be a project per project basis. And it's not right for me to determine that this is the threshold for when you should say no and when you should say yes. But I know, based on personalities and past conversations, I have a much higher threshold and a talent for being able to get excited about and work on shittier sounding tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this is not the episode for it. Sometimes I lean into the shittiness. Sometimes I'm actually just triggering things and doing it in a way that still sounds natural. Whatever it is, that's communicated with the client. And I think another thing too is like I naturally just get really excited. I'd be a horrible A&R because I get excited about really bad records all the time. Like you give me something really weird, I get excited about it. Like very rarely is a song so bad that I'm like, there's no hope in hell for this. You know, that's a neutral thing. That's not a good thing or a bad thing. Mm-hmm. If I was trying to be an A&R, that'd be a horrible thing. But that's the two ends of the spectrum. It's like on one end, know what you can and can't do. Know what you're willing to do and what you're not willing to do. On the other end, that's what you signed up for. And you need to figure out what it is in between. I would say for long... I'm not even give advice on where your threshold should be. Like, I think like a typical like David Goggins type mindset would be like, make sure that you fucking don't give up and you raise that threshold so you take shit. You know, like...
I don't even want to give that
advice, to be honest.
I would also say that like... part of the mentality that I would take from protect your brand with your life is being honest and realistic with your own expectations of what you can turn around and what you're willing. Once again, it's not about willing to put your name on, but rather, do you want to put your name on an end result that you know is not within the realm that you think you're going to be delivering? You know, that more than anything. It's not about whether you want to put your name on a song or not, but do you want to put your name on an end result that the client is not going to be satisfied with because you said, sure, I can do that for you, but it's not realistic to the expectation that the client has. And that's more so what I'm communicating. I'm not going to take on a project where I know you're not going to like it. Whether that's a really good record where I have no, like, I don't mix reggae. I just don't. I bet you I could do a really good job at it, but I just don't mix reggae. Not because of choice or anything. It's just I don't have any reggae clients.
Yeah. So for me, that's like heavy metal.
Yeah.
Like I do a lot of rock and punk, but not heavy metal.
Yeah. And so if there's something where I'm like, hey, listen, the thing you provided to me does not sound anywhere near like what the end results you're asking me for. And I also don't really do this as much as other people. So maybe you're just better off going with somebody else, respectfully speaking, because I'm not going to take on a project where I don't think the material provided is going to match up with what I'm going to output. And if that's not going to line up with your expectations, I'm not going to waste either one of our time, finances, or hopes. You know, I'm not going to waste our emotions on something that maybe you're better suited working with one of my friends. And that's where like having good referrals where if you know, this is kind of the other part of the intake form, knowing if you have a referral for them. Because I'm not a fan of saying no and just leaving it dry like that. I like to refer people. I like passing them off to people who are maybe up and coming or that can take on a project for less than what I'm willing to accept. Or if it's a genre that I don't typically work in, you know, pass them off to somebody else. You know, I don't do Indian music, and yet I got hit for an Indian album. I have no idea what I'm doing in that. I don't understand the lyrics. So I said no, and I passed them off to a friend of mine that does Bollywood music. Cool.
There you go.
Easy, you know, but there's a certain point where you need to say no as part of your intake form, not because you're in a position to say no or anything, but you need to realize that part of the intake's friction is about making sure that you're not taking on the wrong client, not because the client is bad, but because it's the wrong client for you.
Yeah, that's a good point. In general, I would say to be more explicit in what you're saying here, I would say if you feel like you can't emotionally do a good service, like not even like do a good job. I mean, like you're just not going to be enthusiastic about it. There's no way in heck that like that you're going to be able to communicate with a client like you would every other project because you're just like, you just really don't believe in it. Then it's not about the end product. It's about you can't give good service because the service is the product at the end of the day. So that's just something. That's just something to think about. So I'll say no if I feel burnt out. And here's the thing too, Lou, is that you are busy with other stuff too. So you have the ability to say no. So on the opposite hand, if you are new or even intermediate, I would say yes to almost everything, especially if it's genres that you're not comfortable with, right? Yeah. So again, it depends on context. Like I would say hell yeah to everything and anything. Learn how to mix some shit because you got the time. But if like Lou and I, like we have other projects going on all the time. Like if we don't say yes to everything, we're still going to be able to pay rent, you know? And that's a luxury that we have. That's a luxury that not everybody has. But also, so for us at our level, protecting your brand is more important than like the learning. But there are still times where I still say yes to things that I'm not as comfortable with. For the learning of it. So I'm still open to the learning. It's just weighed differently. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's not necessarily a system or just like ideas. But yeah, in general, yeah, dude, if you're excited about it, just say yeah, do it. And don't worry about doing a good job. Like obviously try your best job, but instead like try to be the most reliable human ever. Because like I don't think people fully understand what it means when they hear audio engineers is a service industry. It's like a service provider. Like I don't think people fully understand what that means. That means that the product isn't the mix. The product is your communication and how you give them the mix. How you take notes,
you are the product.
Yeah, we hear often like, oh, audio engineer is a service thing. And you're like, okay, cool. Like, I don't think people understand the full depth of what that means. That means the mix is not the product. the communication is the product. The trust that you build is the product. How you present yourself is the product. Not taking notes personally is the product. At no point is the compression that you use and how limited you made it and the loofs that you delivered to is not the product, you know, most of the time. All right. That being said, okay. Sorry, I got it. That's crazy.
That's still totally on point. So yeah,
there you go. Another simple system. I don't even think about this. This is like so basic that I've never even thought about this. If there's like managers, producers, and artists in the chat, let's say it's got 10 people in the chat, and I send out, and like 5 people are going to give notes. Like if one person responds quickly and sends notes, I will send a confirmation, be like, that's awesome. I'm going to wait a little bit more so other people get notes. And then I like wait for batch notes. Instead of like doing a note after one person responds and then another person responds to the previous version instead of the new version, and then there's confusion going on. So just as much as you can, just like acknowledge. Be like, hey, I got it. I'm going to wait for if this person might have notes. Let me know if you're going to have notes. If not, I'll do the next thing. You know, just be really obviously patient and accepting of all that. But yeah, like batch notes instead of trickle revisions, you know.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
What I've told people to kind of help with that is, and everybody's client is different. Some people like immediacy throughout a day. But I usually let them know, like, hey, I just sent out this version. Let me know what notes you guys have, and I'll be jumping on those tomorrow. That way they have a day to listen to it. They don't feel pressured to give me notes immediately. If they're driving, if they're busy, if they're at school, whatever, it doesn't really matter. They have till tomorrow for me to check on those notes.
That's awesome.
And if there's no notes, I'll check on them and be like, hey, I just want to check in. Did you guys have any revision notes? I didn't see any in the link.
That's super awesome. Like, just being on top of it more than they're on top of it is great service.
Yeah.
Great customer service. I think that we both do this. We both just offer unlimited revisions.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't charge for revisions. Yeah. And sometimes, and very rarely, like once every couple of years, I'm like, all right, you're taking advantage of me. And I let them know. Be like, hey, I'm going to have to start charging you. Mm-hmm. And usually, yeah, so it's like, I don't like even the conversation of is it unlimited revisions, like it's never.
I think I've had to do that for the first time in 2 years recently, where it was just as the timeline implies, like we had finished an album, I want to say a year ago, and then 6 months later they're like, hey, can we alter the masters to these four songs to this? So it's just revision requests. I'm like, whatever, that's cool. A month ago, I get a request like, hey, I know we already created all the DDP files, all the codes have been embedded, all this kind of stuff. Can we have a revision to this mix? I'm like, listen, we finished all the mixes a year ago, and we've already fully mastered everything. You guys got all this approved through the label, and all the time codes have been set and sent to your publishers. If you want to keep the same metadata and everything, like, you know, we had to be very specific how we approach this. I could do it, but in consideration for how long it's been, can we agree to this price? You know, just because I have to go back into the mix, then I had to go back into the master, then I had to recode all the songs. So it's more than just a revision at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Anyway, here's another system that I like to use. There are sometimes I do this based on feeling. I wish there was like more specific, clear indicators that I could like give to you guys, like practical advice on this. I just do this based on feeling. But sometimes I can tell that the team that I'm working with, the artist, oftentimes producers, are like a little bit too, I don't want to say blind because it makes it sound like it's their fault. But they just care a little bit too much. I think if I was being brash and a little bit less sensitive, I would say they got too much demoitis, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're like really, like they're really, they have
maybe
a
the
huge need to control.
A maybe big the need to phrase control. Is losing the forest for the trees at a certain point.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And what I do then is and you could tell based on like how they give notes.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not even be that. Sometimes it's just like I was so far off, like with the first mix or with one revision, that it's just like, all right, I totally misinterpreted what you've been saying. So like often I'll do this if I notice that I'm misinterpreting or if I don't fully understand what they mean. Because warm could mean anything. Warm could mean just less top end. Warm could be more low end in just the vocals. Warm can mean, like there's so many things of what warm can mean. I literally had this today and Friday where it's just like I didn't fully understand what they meant. And this guy, like, I could tell, like, he was going to be like, this is somebody that he's pretty nitpicky. So mm-hmm. instead of doing revisions on my own, I texted him and be like, can we get on a Zoom call, do audio movers,
yes.
which is a plugin that they can listen to the high def audio directly from my DAW. And I show mm-hmm. them my screen share of my DAW. Cohen Heldens, another great mixer. He's like super against showing the DAW, the screen, because he doesn't want to let the artists get in their heads and like start yep. seeing what they're doing. And he's just like, just listen. But the point is, I show my screen, I send them audio movers, and then I do the revisions with them. I have them explain. It's a lot less me explaining. It's a lot more listening to them trying to explain what they mean by warm or like what's going on. How do you mean by this? This is how I'm interpreting. Warm could be vocals or warm could be just top end in general. What do you think? And like they'll kind of give their best guess. And then it's not just like doing it together so they can approve the changes that I'm making. But it's also they're feeling like they're part of the decision-making process, which sounds dumb, but is actually really integral to the process of creating. Like there's many artists, many producers that this is their baby. Songs are their babies and they want to make sure that it's taken care of, right? And some people have a hard time letting go and that's not here or nor there to talk about that. But I mean, like, that's just how it is. So we get on a Zoom call. I don't do a revision. That's not super often. I do it about, 10 to 20% of the time. And if I honestly, if I could do it more, if it was feasible to do it more often, I would do it more often. And I think, like, for example, Cohen does it like almost every single time. Like, he does not do revisions without getting on Zoom.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Honestly, so most of the time, if I'm working with a client who's very specific, I just default to just doing audio mover sessions. My revisions become kind of like 1 hour sessions with each other, where it's like the first 15 minutes is us just catching up, just talking about what they felt in the record. The next 30 minutes is just us going through the session and just manipulating or showing like, hey, this is what I'm hearing. This is kind of what I understood from your notes. Let me know if this is actually how you like it. This is the previous bounce versus this. And usually I'll make the revisions happen before we jump on the call, just so it downtime is just way out the window. Like there is no downtime. Like I've done the things that I thought needed to be done and all that I need to do is get you to sign off on it. If you want some more done or you want less of what I've done to be taken away or whatever, then totally cool. We just create a bounce. I send it off. We hop off the call and it usually takes like an hour. And usually that makes it to where a song where that could have had five revisions became one revision. You know, those audio mover sessions are game changing when it comes to client relations too, because it's really nice when clients, especially, I don't think all my clients are neurotic. I actually have some clients that are very, very much enjoy their communication of what their expectation in each other's roles are. For instance, I have a client who just openly says like, hey man, like I have no idea what any of this audio lingo is. I just know when it sounds right. So like whatever you want to do to it is whatever you want to do with it. I just let you know if it sounds right. And when they come to me with notes, I always end up going to audio movers because, hey, just take a listen to it. And if it sounds right to you, let me know, because this is what I thought sounds cool. And he might just say like, yeah, just a little bit less delay, a little less this. Okay, cool. Yeah, sounds cool. Anyway, we can bump up his verse. All right, cool. Done. You know, and that's it. So even for clients that don't know how to communicate revisions, just being able to be on a phone call with them makes them feel 1,000 times better and not trying to overcomplicate the process by saying, hey, can you put it in the link? Hey, can you put it in the text? Can you put it in an email? Whatever. Sometimes these little Zoom meetings that you can do with the client is the reason that they also just inherently build a stronger level of trust within you.
Yeah, exactly. This is not really like systems, but I think it is important. Communication and like just emotional intelligence is highly important for this stage too. Again, you say that not all your clients are neurotic, but neuroticism is often hidden too. So even if like, if you like make fun of me, even if I get hurt, which is almost impossible, like I'm like, if for some reason I get butt hurt about something you said,
now I gotta be really racist to DK.
I'm not gonna tell you. I'm not going to tell you or treat you that much different, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of it gets hidden. That being said, your language should be like kind of like de-escalating. And instead of saying like, no, or that's a bad idea, right? You should be saying like yes and or kind of language when pushing back. Another thing too, is that everybody from all over the world has different systems and different ways of doing things. Like, for example, I know a lot of people that like charge for revisions. They do have a lot of different systems. Here's the thing about that sort of thing. If you ever get to the point that you are working with a label, right? You got to look at it differently. Like the fact that the producer needs to ask for 10 revisions means that you're a bad engineer. doesn't mean that they're picky. It means you're bad, right? So it's like, to a certain degree, it's just not feasible to charge them for what they see as your mistakes to a certain degree, right? It's not always that case. That's kind of like potentially unhealthy if you think too much like that. But like when you're working with an artist and you're the professional on an independent level, like, yeah, then it's like, okay, you're just too picky. But like when you're working with like world class producers and artists, like, I'm going to charge Universal an extra $20 for this pass. No, just from the beginning, you don't charge labels anything less than $1,000 to begin with. So it's like, I think it's just good training to get in the point of like unlimited revisions. I'm here to get it to the end. That's not feasible always, but that's the context that me and Lou are looking at. Like, every single time Lou and I are working on sessions, there's multiple people involved, possibly management, possibly A&R, possibly more label people, other creative people, multiple producers, songwriters, the artists themselves, and the feature, and then their management team, and then their freaking label people. Oh my goodness. Sometimes it's like so crazy. And at that point, like the game plays really, really different at that level, right? So like the idea of like paying extra for revisions is just a fucking stupid concept at that level.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, if the game is independent and you're making all your money from independent artists at this point in time, like, yeah, maybe consider charging for revisions. So that's just something to think about. It's not about, there is an answer. Everybody does things completely differently. The main point is communicating and communicating well. Okay. Let's see, any other systems type thing? Oh, another thing too, is that every single time, this is for me, every time I get an approval, after I get an approval, I wait a day. I tell them this, like, hey, sit on this, sleep on this. And when you give me one more final approval, if this is appropriate, depending on the client, it's not appropriate. Sometimes they're just rushing out the door, right? I'll ask them for another day or two to sit on it. And then once they give me the final approval, I will immediately upload the TV mix, the instrumental, the acapella, and the stems every single time, even if they don't want it. Like, if, especially with independent artists, like, dude, they're like, they don't have a concept of all the different alt mixes that they need and the stems. So you just send them deliverables and you don't upload anything. And then 5 years later, he's like, I think I just sold my song to a TV thing. Can you bounce the TV mix and the stems? And you're like, I don't even have the fucking file for it anymore. So just upload it, just archive it, save it on a hard drive in some way or another, or send it to them. And like, and if they lose it, that's on them, right? But if you use like a nice cloud server, like FilePass and stuff like that, you can, I usually, if I mention it, I say I keep the files for a year, but I've never deleted files for storage on my FilePass yet. Yeah, Lou, right? Right?
I haven't deleted a single file off my FilePass. Yeah. And I've got things that probably don't need to be there. I've got like full Pro Tools sessions that people ask me to send them a copy of. And I probably could delete it. I just don't want to delete it, just so that if they ever click that link, it's still there.
Yeah. And specifically about like bouncing alts too, I'm telling like it wasn't until a couple years ago that I finally decided like I'm going to do it for every single mix, regardless of the level. And
like
how
it's
much
just part of
me.
It.
Yeah, just make it part of it. Because I used to do this thing where I didn't do it unless they asked for it. I'd ask them if they want it. And if they said, no, we're good, then I would just not do it. And it bites me in the butt way too often. Dude, I'm just going to do it. I don't give a shit. I'm going to do it.
Speaking from the other side of the pond, live guys that have to deal with playback engineers and things like that, it actually makes a world of a difference if when you're doing a live show and you're the artist. The TV mix is great because it's usually just muted leads. It's just backing vocals and the instrumental. And then other times it's just the instrumental and an acapella track. That's cool. But some shows sound significantly better if it's not just a two track. Like if you have the drum bus, the bass bus, the, you know, we can call it music effects, whatever. Everybody's stems kind of look different at a certain point. But there's kind of like a little standard that most people deliver on. But if you have a simple little 8-group bus down and things like that, you can actually make the artist's live life that much better, because there's plenty of artists that you know, they, let's say it's just a band, a rock band. Cool. Yeah, they could probably play their records if it's just a four-piece band. When they recorded and mixed their album, it stayed as a four-piece band. But this is nor here nor there, but I know that there's people who have an opinion about people who perform with backtracks or backing vocals live or this and that, or like they switch their leads in and out so that they can take a breath in between lines, whatever. Listen, it's 2025. Anybody is anything, and you, any food can identify as another food. But when it comes to playback tracks and all that kind of stuff, it's industry standard, baby. So if you can actually make their life that much easier in all facets of their work, they will come back. But if they had to keep coming back to you for something that's missing that other people are providing as a standard, you're starting to show why you stand out in a different sense, but it may not be in the positive way.
Yeah, you know how I've gotten 90% of my clients over the years, independent artists?
I'm guessing by providing alternatives.
Dude, I can be so specific. It is because they had a bad experience because the previous engineer just took way too long and left people in the dark when it came to revisions. Yeah. I asked for a final bounce and one revision a month ago, and they still haven't texted me back. They keep ghosting me. Yeah. That's an extreme thing. But it almost always comes down to they're ghosting me, they're not responding, they're not quick enough, they're leaving me in the dark. One of those, or a combination of all of them. I'm telling you, I cannot name how many clients I've gotten, because usually engineers are kind of like barbers. You don't change willy-nilly.
No.
You have to have a reason to change once you find someone that you like. So I'm telling you, how you get people to be like, I need to find a new barber, and then they find me. I'm telling you, it is just taking too long for revisions, for notes, for alts, and not communicating with them, not letting them know, hey, I'm a bit busy today because I'm at Disneyland. You know, let them know. People are willing to wait as long as you let them know. There's a whole documentary about Disneyland for this. Like, the reason why Disneyland has wait times is so people have a better expectation of how long they're going to wait, so they're less bitter about waiting longer lines. Yeah.
Yeah, they have the little check-in points in the line, too.
Yeah, imagine getting in line for a roller coaster and you have no clue, no idea of what it's going to be. It's going to piss you off.
Yeah.
It's a super basic concept. So don't be stupid. I feel like, I don't know, this is the problem where it's like, there's a cognitive bias for this. But yeah, dude, it's just, these are things that are so simple for me that I just keep forgetting.
I think like, one of the...
It's so automatic for me.
I think one of my favorite things about like communication being so simple is literally just the idea that it's a text away. It's a text away. And it, most people are okay with a small delay. And when I say most people, I mean like in a very independent sense. Like, unless you're dealing with, because once you get to the label realm, we're talking like fast turnaround deadlines half the time. So they're kind of looking at you for immediacy, professionality, and your effectiveness within a very short timeline. But if you're working with independent artists where you're kind of just helping them out, kind of breaking them a deal, whatever that situation may be, especially if you're breaking them a deal, they're usually more understanding to the situation, which is, you know, like I'm going on tour soon. So I'm not going to be accepting a lot of projects without communicating in advance. Hey, my delay times are going to be a little bit longer right now. I can still get you in at the same price. If anything, I can offer a small discount if you're willing to wait X amount of time for me to jump on it. But realistically speaking, I've known people who accept payment. And this is across all spectrums of work. We just dealt with this with some acoustic installation guys, which was, you know, we send you a deposit or we send you a payment, and then you give us no level of expectation of when something's going to be done, when to expect an update or a scheduling or anything of that nature. It's just kind of like, why do we have to reach out to you for the update if you've already received payment? So like, if you're the type that accepts payment in advance, but you're lacking in the communication department, it instantly is a red flag.
Yeah. Just be good with your communication. I don't know how much we can emphasize with that. Like, it is crazy how if you just do that, you could literally suck. And if you're just the best communicator, you will keep and make clients. It's stupid how true that is. It shouldn't be that true. Like, Yeah, it is. And here's the thing too. I think also, never mind. Don't worry about it. I'm censoring myself.
Don't you dare, DK.
So anything else systems wise, that's about it as far as systems go.
I mean, I guess if you're scaling, like if the likelihood of you listening to this podcast and already being there is probably not the highest, but there, I know there are people who listen to our podcast who are currently there where they have assistants and things like that. If you are at the point where you have assistants who are prepping session files, handling some revisions for you and everything, even within your team, just communication, but that's it. Like it all, like from the start of this episode, it all comes down to communication from the intake form, setting expectations from there to the phone call, just trying to connect, say hello, get to know the client and who they potentially are, whether you know them for a long time and knowing their communication styles, it all comes back to that one point.
Amen. Also, the Dodgers just lost.
Ooh.
I'm upset about it. They just lost to the Angels.
I love how invested you are in baseball now.
Yeah, dude. I play like 3 times a week now.
That's good, man.
It's gotten to the point where I almost threw out my arm. Like, I've never thrown a ball so much that, like, I'm like, my shoulder starts crumbling.
I know this is going to sound cliche, but I just want to say it just because I can, but welcome to your 30s.
No. It's not because I'm old. It's because
I understand. It's just that you're in your 30s now, and I can say it.
Yeah.
It's a dad joke. Come on, man.
No, it's funny. I will say, like, I say this with pride. I am in shape than most people in their low 20s. I'm in better shape than most people in their low 20s. I will. Yeah. We play basketball with a bunch of younger kids. I am outrunning them. I get injured less.
But you're not the guy that tells them to arm wrestle you, are you? Uh-oh.
Wait, what do you mean? I don't understand.
You've never met the guy that's always trying to arm wrestle a younger guy?
Oh, no, heck no. No.
Yeah. No, that's the red flag I see.
Too. Yeah. I look young too, so I'm very secretly in shape because they all think that I'm in shape, so I must be young, and I look young. And so it's like they find out that I'm 31 with kids, 2 kids.
They're like, how is your hair not gray?
How are you running this much? How are you not hurting yourself?
Just tell me you injected yourself with the blood of David Goggins.
There it is. No, I say this out loud. I got a laugh the other day because during baseball, during like a scrimmage game, I was like, yo, believe in me. I got the cardio of a billy goat. And he's like, damn, that's crazy. Just put me in center field. I don't need any other outfielders. I will run to every single ball that comes out here. Anyway, I'm totally invested into baseball. At first, it was racial because the third, the Dodgers signed the third Japanese pitcher. Now it's like, okay, as a Japanese man, I have to get invested into
the Dodgers. There's some representation.
Yeah, I tell you, it's not even about representations. It's just regular racism, all right? It's just
well, I'm not going to lie. I saw that they did the One Piece Dodgers collab for the promo card.
With the hat. Oh, with the hat and the card, yeah.
Dude, that's one of the most scalped trading cards right now.
Yeah, for sure. I don't doubt it. You can get the hat for like 50, 70 bucks.
That's not bad. Too bad I don't watch One Piece.
But the card is like hundreds of dollars. Yeah, anyway. Yeah. Yeah, dude, I love... People hate the Dodgers. They like really hate the Dodgers and hate Ohtani. I'm going to tell you right now, that's just unwarranted. And it's just... they're sad that he's just not on their team. You know, and...
Is Ohtani not part of the Dodgers anymore?
Okay, he is. He's definitely part of the Dodgers. A lot of people hate him. It doesn't matter. The MLB glazes him all the time. All right. Here's the thing. Let me tell you a little bit about Roki Sasaki, okay? Roki Sasaki, the third Japanese pitcher that they signed this year, he's like 23, 24. I think he's like 23. Young dude. He's been injured. He's not panned out this season. He's been on the injured list for like, he got on the 60-day, then he got on 15-day. Like, he's been out. He hasn't like pitched at all. The beginning of the season, he was pitching poorly. He used to pitch like 100, 102, 103. Now he's not even, he's like in the mid 90s by the time he got on the injury list, and his RPMs, spinning the ball, just not spinning as hard. Something's going on. He gets on the injury list, doesn't do well. But the reason why he's so great, first off, he's from my wife's hometown. Not like that's, he played for my wife's hometown's NPB team, the Chiba Marines, and my wife's from Chiba. Anyway, this guy, this is only for this. The concept of this is difficult to grasp, especially if you're not like a baseball fan. But if you are a baseball fan, listen to this. The reason why he was so hyped, the number one prospect for pitcher for the Dodgers, is because this guy in Japan, in the NPB, threw a perfect game, and then his next start threw like 7 or 8 perfect innings before he swapped out with the relief. So he's like thrown 17 to 18 perfect innings in a row. This guy is like absolutely insane. Helped win the Japan team for the 2023 WBC, which I'm looking forward to seeing next year as well. And then the Olympics in 2028, hosted in LA. I might go watch that with my buddies. Anyway, can you tell how much I love it? If you want to get invested into baseball and know a little bit about me and my background and why I like baseball, there's a YouTube channel called Baseball Doesn't Exist, and they have a video. It's like one of their most best videos. It's their most watched videos. There's one called Baseball in Japan. It is an hour long. I'm telling you, that is one of the best videos you could ever watch. It is entertaining. It is informational. It goes by so quick. It is such a good video about baseball culture in Japan and what it means to Japanese people. And baseball, you don't have to be into baseball to watch that video. They talk about, like, right now, high school baseball. Okay, I don't know why I'm talking about this. Forgive me, podcast listeners that don't care about baseball. That's going to be like, I'm talking to the one percenters that are like baseball, right? Japan's most popular sport is easily baseball, introduced in the late 1800s, all right? American guy came in, wanted to like introduce Western education systems to Japan, and then part of the education system that this guy was bringing in was sports, and was baseball. Okay, that's how baseball got introduced. Japan has no concept of sports, like team sports, because up until then, all their sports have been based on military. Bow and, like bow and arrow, archery, right? Wrestling, judo, kendo, or like just any sort of like knife, like, you know, fighting with swords and sticks. Nothing is like, it's all military stuff. So the fact that they introduced baseball, like to this day, when you play on a baseball team, most schools, they stopped making this rule a couple of years ago. So some schools very few schools have allowed this to change. But in school, you have to shave your head if you're on the baseball team, like you're in the military. And like they practice like 8 to 12 hours a day. It's not weird to practice 8 to 12. Ichiro for the Mariners was famous for saying, when I played baseball in high school, I practiced so hard that I got to see my friends 4 to 6 hours a year. So it's like, they're like highly dedicated to the sport. Twice a year, once in spring. It's not as big of a deal as the summer one, which is happening right now. We're like almost done with the first wave of the finals. Twice a year, or the most important one, summer one, they have Koshien. Koshien is all 4,000 plus schools with a baseball team in Japan, single elimination tournament to find the best high school baseball team in the country. You lose once, you're out. Single elim. Each prefecture state gets one representative. So most of it is like not broadcast as heavily broadcasted on TV. And so you get down, and then two prefectures get two. So like Tokyo gets two representatives, Hokkaido gets two representatives, but everybody else gets one representative team. And then, so there's 49 teams, single elim. It's all broadcasted on TV. It's done in a major league stadium. And it's like they're mostly high school seniors. This is the last chance ever. They're probably not going to play pro ball. They've been practicing super hard their entire lives. Like the amount of insane pressure to have the honor of taking it home, like, is insane. Miracles happen. One year there was a dude that like had to get a sacrifice bunt. The pitcher threw it way outside and up. The guy threw the bat into the air, literally, but when it made the ball made contact with the bat, it was out of his hands. The ball hit the bat midair, landed fair, and then the catcher and the pitcher didn't know what to do. He made it safe to first, and the third base runner got up. Third base runner ran home. It's like,
yeah.
See, like, because here's another thing, too. In the MLB, everybody's really strong.
Yeah.
But in, like, these high schoolers that have been training, again, 6 to 12 hours a day mm-hmm. for every day, including the weekends, right? They're in fucking great shape.
Yeah.
They're in absolutely incredible shape. Now, they're not the strongest and the biggest, but they got the cardio of a billy goat, like each of them. So it's like they're doing this insane stuff. Also, like, this, they're seniors. Like, this is the in Japan, the reason why most anime slice of life stuff is like high schoolers is because that's like the part, the point in life. That's like a very integral, important part of life in Japanese culture. Cause that's like the last time that like, you're not really thinking too much. You're like hyper present, hyper aware. You're learning, you're growing. And like, you're never going to have these memories and moments ever again like this. Cause then you're going to get a job. You're gonna have to like do a living. It's like, so it's these kids that are like fighting for the honor of the country. And by the way, 124 million people in Japan. Yeah, like the final game, I swear on my life, I might be wrong on this, has about 80 to 100 million viewers. Like it is more popular than the NBA Finals and the NFL Super Bowl combined. Like as far as viewership goes. It's yeah. absolutely insane. Anyway, sorry, I ranted.
It wouldn't be baseball the Mixing Music podcast if we didn't. By the way, everyone take a shot.
Yeah. Sorry. That's just what my wife and I are. Like, anyway, it's all started because I just started teaching Kaname how to throw, and then I got really into it. So, as you could tell, I really love it right now.
Yeah. I think it's one of those benefits of ADHD, which is hyper-focus on something, and then we end up, like, going deeply into it.
Yeah, dude. Which for me means I'm like a kid all the time, just discovering new hobbies, sucking at them. Because as the famous Zen monk said, Suzuki Shinryu, he says, to a beginner, there are infinite possibilities, but to the expert, there are few. Anyway, why did I do like a Jedi pose while doing that? Anyway,
You didn't even make the Yoda sound, man.
Beginner's mind, dude. There's something really, really beautiful about being a noob. This is mm-hmm. relevant to mixing. There's something really, really beautiful about being a noob. And here's the thing. You're only a noob once. Like, if you're inexperienced and you feel like the world is ahead, you're very excited about mixing or audio or music, like, that's a very unique situation that you're in. Like,
yeah.
You can't go back to becoming naive and excited about everything all the time, you know? Like, it's a learned skill. Like, the fact that Lou and I are excited about music, like, it's not just natural. Like, everybody, lots of people like music, but if you, like, do make a living from music, like, you have to work on liking music and create boundaries or do whatever, like, figure out what it is, right? How mm-hmm. to stay in love with music. Like, it's not easy to do. But, like, as a beginner, you get into music and you're like, this is the best. I fucking love mixing. It's the greatest thing I've ever done in my life. I'm never going to do anything else. And you're just so naive and blissful. Like, it's so, you're just so present. And so it's like, and then that's only once. Like, you're only ignorant once. Like, that's such a unique, amazing time to just live, dude. Just live! Live!
Dude, it's actually kind of cool because I'm not going to lie. I think I become that kid every time I get new gear. A good example is, like, today I got my new in-ears that I had molded for me. And I've maybe not worn them for like 2 hours today. Like, I've been taking them everywhere. I was like, let me see what it sounds like when I'm driving. Like, why the fuck does it matter? You're not going to wear them while you're driving. It's like, oh, to simulate what it's like if I wear them on a plane when I'm traveling to the next show. You know what I mean? I'm like, you don't need to test that now. You could just wear them on the flight in 2 weeks. Like, what's wrong with you? But like I got some Neumann KM-184s, a couple weeks ago for, you know, I just really like them for overheads. I've always wanted a set. So I bought a set. And I'd started miking everything in my house. If there was an instrument to be miked, I miked it. I recorded it. I played with every fucking angle. And it's just one of those moments where you're like, so this is what you do with your free time? Yes. And, yeah. Yeah, leave me alone. I'm in my bubble.
There you go. Yeah, I'm serious. Like, just be a kid about it. At the end of the day, like, I tell this, I say this every once in a while, and I don't think people realize how insightful this is until, like, until they're years into their career. Like, really, the only advice that I could ever give is don't worry about anything else other than to just make sure you enjoy doing what you do. Like, just have fun. Just enjoy mixing.
Just keep swimming.
Yeah, that's it. Like, if you can focus on, figure that shit out. If you can figure that shit out, man, that is the solution. That is the answer to life's problems.
Oh, yeah.
Just, yeah. All right. Anyway, and that's why I like baseball right now, because I'm such a noob with it. I'm like, actually, like, you know, when you're so new to something, you get good so fast. So, like, I've been, like, throwing bullpens and, like, pitching a lot, which is part of the reason why I've been throwing my arm out. And, like, it's just so exciting because I'm, like, it's the progress is tangible. Like, I'm hitting strike zone way more often than when I started. You know, like, it's so great. I'm throwing strikes, dude. It's so crazy. And I'm throwing them hard. And I wasn't able to do that. Because, I don't know. I was just excited about it.
I don't know. There's one thing I'll always be a bitch about. I think I'm too scared of the ball once it's been hit by the bat.
Like, you don't want to get...
Yeah, I just saw a cricket on my wall or something. I know it's not like a roach or anything. It's like a cricket. But I love that there's just a natural reaction to that. Hey, go to our YouTube channel. Look at my natural reaction to this shit.
I haven't posted a video of our podcast in so long, dude.
Oh my God. This is going to be the one.
Yeah. Anyway, happy mixing, my friend. Yeah, so let's just end it here. Talk to us on Discord. Talk to us on Instagram.
Patreon.
And join us on Patreon, where we have exclusive episodes. Something I do want to know, let us know on Discord and Instagram. And if you're a Patreon subscriber, I'm considering uploading ad-free versions of the public episodes to the Patreon as well. Because right now it's only the exclusive episodes. And then if you want to watch our episodes with me and Lou, you have to listen to ads. And I'm wondering, like, if you're paying, is that a benefit that's worth the hassle of? Ad-free regular episodes? Or does it just clutter the exclusive? Because here's the thing, too. It's the expense of it clutters the exclusive algorithm. Because now you have to sift through when you're, like, looking through the exclusive RSS feed and on Patreon. Now you're, like, sifting through. It's like, all right, this was a regular episode. It just makes it cluttered versus, like, these are all exclusive. Mm-hmm. Is that separation important to you? If not, if it is, that's another option, too. Also, you could just skip the ads, you know? Like, if you do play them, we get, like, you know, a couple cents or whatever, so... but anyway, thank you so much for listening. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive.